For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a national championship edition of the Only Podcast. I'm your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Guys, the tournament is here. Technically a true fact while we're recording this podcast, and Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there, which hopefully you played, and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship, which is going on literally right now. You can access the most up to the minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket real time all the way through the tournament. If you're like me and you bet Kentucky to make the national championship, the game being played right now, you probably stopped doing this quite some time ago. Head to Bet Online today and get in on all the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. And John, I think we've reached the point, like, we're sitting here, technically the season's still going on. Listen, for everybody but Purdue and UConn fans, this season has been over for weeks, and we are well and truly into the silly season of collegiate sports off seasons, and it's been a doozy already. And like I said, we're technically still in the 2023-2024 season as we speak.
It is, I don't know. Well, first of all, before we get too far in here, how are you feeling about our favorite part of the year starting early, the coaching carousel?
Oh,
it's our favorite thing, and it's already happened during the season. It's the best.
It's really great. It's nice to see college basketball like kind of sack up and say, okay, college football, we're not going to let you guys be the only ones to steal the coaching carousel, because college football coaching carousel is electric every single year. Basketball, not always as much, because blue blood programs, you know, they don't open up all that often in college basketball specifically. College football feels like we turn them over pretty frequently, or there's more of them, and the demand to win just feels like impossibly high at most of them. Hence why LSU had like three coaches in 4 years or whatever it was.
The biggest boy moves.
Yeah.
Firing winners. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it's happening across the board. Where do you want to start? You want to start national, or you want to start at home?
I want to start at home.
Okay.
Where a person didn't win. And it was at Detroit, Detroit Mercy, a team that won one game, I believe, this year. Oof. And I think, to me, as we talk about bag getting, low-key, shout out Mike Davis. Who walked away from that program probably when his kid was done and just put out an out of office, and they kept paying him for, I think, two more years. Shout out. And I think finally someone was like, wait, have we not won a basketball game? Like, it's fine to be bad, but not like nationally known bad. And Mike Davis couldn't even be asked to do the bare minimum, was asked to leave. And thus a position has opened up, a difficult position, one of the most challenging college basketball head coaching jobs in the country. You could argue maybe second worst. I would say the only thing I can think of that would be worse is Chicago State and their only team that's independent, and they travel
play like tough.
30 away games or something. It's tough. But yeah, Detroit Mercy needed a coach, and Mark Montgomery raised his hand. And he said, sure. So that leaves Michigan State in a position where change has to happen, whether Tom or the staff wanted it or not. And so the first shakeup of the offseason has begun.
Yeah, you know, shout out to Monty for getting a second crack as a head coach. Obviously, very long time, you know, Spartan. Has been an assistant in total under Izzo for 10 years, 4-year starter under Judd Heathcote. I mean, really, you know, consummate Spartan. Has left once before to be the head coach at Northern Illinois. It didn't go great, which is why he came back to East Lansing. He was there for 10 years, though, I have to say, which is way longer than I thought.
Again, that's a situation where if you have a good enough football program or the athletic program doesn't care, you can just chill until it gets so bad that someone has to do something, you know?
Listen, to Monty's credit, while it may not have all been, you know, sunshine and roses, he did, I'm reading through his bio here, he, in 2013-14, his third year at NIU, Monty engineered the largest single season win improvement in school history and 10th largest nationally in that season. Wow. 10 wins. That's the good news. The bad news, you know, if they won 10 more games, they had 15 wins on the season. So, but either way, Monty, like, being genuine for a moment, you don't hear bad things about him as just a person. And, you know, it is rare that, especially when a first stint as a head coach maybe doesn't go as you had initially envisioned, you know, second stint is not guaranteed. So the fact that he's getting a shot, good news for Monty, like you said, almost literally impossible for it to get worse there. And he has a ton of relationships in the state of Michigan. So, hey, listen, I think if you're Mercy, you want someone familiar with the area that's coached behind a great legendary coach in the state, you know, tough to complain too much.
So that leaves us with an opening here, a thank you for his services. And there are some names that have popped up. Some fun, not some ho-hum. We're here for the fun ones, but I think most realistically people are thinking, well, Saadi Washington seems to be an exciting name that has gotten people's attention. And for people who forgot, he recruited the heck out of University of Michigan. Got a lot of guys there. Nothing happened when they got there, but they got first round picks there, right? And that's half the battle. So that's a good sign. And also, just having a complete, he's a Lansing native, apparently is interested in coming home. His dad played at MSU, I believe. So he's interested for a lot of reasons, but I think it would be a very good hire. I think you need an outside perspective away from your coaching tree.
Yes.
So yeah, that is, the first name I'll say. Any others that?
Well, just to kind of hit on some names, and these are just the most recent ones. I think there's some from a much longer period ago that are really impressive for Saadi Washington. But again, we're talking about really high 4 to 5-star caliber players: Caleb Houston, Musa Diabate, Terrace Reed, Hunter Dickinson, Kobe Bufkin, Frankie Collins. These are guys that, while again, like their careers in, you know, Ann Arbor may not have played out exactly the way that they would have hoped, you know, we're talking about kids ranked in the top 50 nationally, all of those guys. And that's just in the last handful of years. So I believe he was also pretty involved in some older, some more historic recruits as well, because he was at Michigan for quite some time. Since 2016, I think he was there. So I'm pretty sure that, like, he was involved in the Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner, Isaiah Livers recruitments. I mean, this dude really has an eye for talent and also can reel in some huge recruits. So, that would be, I think, if you look at characteristics for what you want this coach to have, it's somebody that can keep up with, I think, modern recruiting, obviously, has an eye for talent. I mean, again, it's not like you look back at MSU's classes and think, oh, these are a bunch of bums. I mean, MSU was one of the top three classes this past year. So continuing to reel in top level talent like that is huge. But like you said, I think the biggest thing is like a fresh approach, somebody who's, you know, not tied to or has previous opinions of players that are in rotations. I think when you saw this year, I mean, people were screaming at the top of their lungs that, you know, some of these freshmen should just be playing more. And it's, you know, I don't think a coincidence that some of the assistant coaches have, you know, a little bit more faith in their upperclassmen, not willing to take as many risks, and assistants define a lot of the rotation. So having somebody that can bring in a fresh set of eyes and just like some extra juice, I think is as big a deal as anything. And I prefer personally, like a slightly someone who's on the younger end, realistically, it's like, it's gotta be somebody that Izzo respects, because if it's not, you know, then who knows if he'll take the advice, if he'll give them as much leeway. But yeah, I don't know, fresh perspective and somebody that's creative to me are the two biggest things.
So Tom Crean would not be those things.
Oh, but that'd be fun.
It would be if you're here.
Listen, if we are here to just have a good old time, I would love Cromteen on my sidelines. That guy, just the entertainment value alone. And I think we've come to his defense several times, but I'll do it again. He was an objectively very good, successful head coach when he was coaching at Marquette and at Indiana. And if the man just had a better haircut, or, you know, could have actually gotten over the hump in Indiana, he never would have had to struggle after that.
It's just ever. Like, get over the hump at Indiana is like such an obscure goal. Like their idea of success is not reality. And so he had a great run and they were not satisfied.
What's happened since?
Yeah, this is what you get.
Go look at coaches, honestly, between Bobby Knight and Tom Crean, and tell me about the Indiana head coaches.
Yeah. Mike Davis.
Mike Davis. I was waiting for it. He's literally the only other one, and he took him all the way to the national championship game.
And yeah, he's the one that actually took him somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Tom Crean gave them objectively the best stretch of basketball that they've had in the last 30 years.
That team was so stacked. Zeller, Oladipo. Who am I missing?
Yogi Ferrell.
Holy moly.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had a bunch of other dudes, too. Watford was incredible. Like, they had a bunch. And he just kept reeling them in. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't there for that. I was thinking... No, he wasn't there for that one. But, I mean, listen, point is he brought in a ton of talent. That was never the issue for Crean. It was in-game adjustments was always the issue for Crean. But
that's what the funniest smart coaches, guy. That's what the funniest coaches do, though, is everything but. Like, that's why we love Jimbo Fisher. You know, that's why we love guys who can get them there. And then they're like, well, do what now? Coach them?
Yeah. They all also have just like such a special way of looking ridiculous. Like Jimbo in like the poncho looks so insane with the huge play sheet in front of him. Crean with the haircut and the glasses and just like the, you know, staring into the distance all the time. It's just so damn funny.
It is. So speaking of programs with potentially unrealistic expectations, but who knows to them? Maybe it's realistic. The Kentucky Wildcats have re-signed. How would you say it?
They have allowed their coach to leave.
Yeah. Did not stop. Oh no, wait, come back, please. They were in a bit of a pickle because they didn't know what to do. They didn't have, you know, they were not ready to fire him, you know, the buyout. And maybe they were, but it was going to be, that's a lot of money. What was the buyout you told me?
$33 million, I believe.
$33. I mean, like, that's not, in basketball money, that is a ton of money. That is Jimbo at more than Jimbo at Tech. And for, yeah, would you say it's bigger than Texas A&M's buyout of Jimbo in basketball money conversion to football?
I think so. I don't know. I don't think that wasn't that like $78 million.
Yeah, it was $75 million. That it was so expensive.
It's equal in proportion.
It was so expensive that message boards were using threads as creative outlets to figure out how they could raise this amount of money instead of using that money for anything like, you know, good, but like the sole purpose. And then the best/worst idea someone came up with was like, we only need to raise $1 million because that's how much it costs. Now that was when we had lost the plot. Like we've
gone beyond the pale.
This is, we cannot.
I'd also love to see what kind of hitmen the Kentucky Wildcat fans could go find. I would just that the character study there would be incredible.
The problem with that is, like, Cal's a mafia man. Like,
oh,
you can't off a Don. You know, he just,
no, he's a made man.
Yeah, you can't do it. So they would have run into that problem. But they fortunately they didn't have to go down a path they didn't want to go down, which was what we're describing, which was apparently killing their head coach. we laugh, but like there's some messed up stuff. Like people.
Oh yeah.
We were talking about this before the podcast. I think Kentucky fans are the most insane of any college basketball fan. Is that fair?
I think so. I think it's fair. It equates to the Florida State football fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's
unhinged.
I mean, listen, man, if you want just some good old fashioned laughs and to just you think about what sports mean in the United States, listen to Kentucky sports radio. Like wow. I've only heard clips and it is truly just a remarkable place. It's everything. When you hear the phrase Kentucky sports radio, it's exactly what you expect.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you got Meemaw calling in from the holler. Like, it's unbelievable stuff. And that is not a fan base that you want to irk. And there are several ex-coaches who will attest to that. I'm trying to think of his name. What was the old Texas A&M coach who was there for a hot minute and then got let go and Cal came in?
Oh,
Billy something.
Yeah, Billy Gillespie.
Billy Gillespie, yes. Yeah, not a name you want to say once you enter the borders of the states of Kentucky.
That did not go well at all.
No, did not go well. And I believe he was the predecessor to Cal. And it's, you know.
You know where he's at now? You know what happened to Port?
Is he coaching basketball? Or is he in rehab?
Wow. both, potentially. He went from Kentucky, and then he got a gig at Texas Tech, and then took a couple years off after that didn't go well, and was at Ranger College, a public community college in Texas, and then got the job at Tarleton State, newly Division I Tarleton State. So he's climbing back up that mountain, dude.
Man, coaching will take you some weird places. That's one of them. But back to Coach Cal. He is headed. We've been saying he's not at Kentucky, but guess where he is? He's at Arkansas. And also, as we record this, I don't even think the ink is dry on the contract. Uh-huh. We've already got a handful of things happening. We've got two prominent candidates that everybody threw out there have already come out and publicly said, I am not interested in this job.
That's not posted yet.
Coach Cal has not said he's not the Kentucky head coach. And this is all already happening. And it's funny, you mentioned the money and the buyout. You know who $33 million doesn't matter to? The Walton family. Yeah.
It was the Tyson Chicken people and the
It's a combination. I believe Bud Walton has his name on the basketball arena, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And like he is the brother of Sam Walton, who started Walmart. So, yeah, I listen. It actually makes – and you know who else is a huge donor for Arkansas? Jerry Jones. Like, how Arkansas doesn't have the greatest facilities for both sports of all time is beyond
me. And suck. There, remember when we picked on Cal for a while? Mm-hmm. Arkansas does not get enough shit.
No.
They're in the SEC, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy. They should be great in both sports. And this year they stunk in both of them. Okay. So he's gone to Arkansas. I actually think, again, so we'll start there, and then we'll kind of backtrack as to like how he got there, and then we'll talk about the coaches to replace him. So I think in a way it's actually kind of a great move for both sides. For Arkansas, it's ever since the like Nolan Richardson years,
like 30 years ago.
Yeah, which is quite some time. I believe that was the 80s or the 90s.
1994.
Yeah, I was young. I don't remember that at all. So exactly. So that's a very long time ago. Muss did a great job bringing them back from Eric Musselman, bringing them back from from the verge of death, and then Cal is inheriting a program from Musselman. We'll talk about where he went. That I think is actually probably one of the, even though they didn't make the tournament this year, one of the healthiest, you know, SEC programs he could have really gone to. He steps into a place that, you know, you can recruit to, that now has a little bit of a taste for, you know, what it means to be successful. And he obviously brings some, like, he still recruits at as high a level as there is. I think the interesting thing will be to see whether how much of that was Kentucky and how much of that was Cal, because it's going to become very, very obvious very, very quickly. But I'm curious what you think of the, you know, initial pairing of Arkansas and Cal.
I mean, Arkansas got a steal here. They got a guy who was, I don't think they could ask for a better situation to fall into here. I mean, the guy who brings you back from the dead to a program that has no business taking it from you, USC. Meaning both programs. I guess USC is a great place to land just because of the location. Basketball aside, I just mean Southern California versus Arkansas. No doubt. But Musselman leaving, you know, they're in kind of being panic mode, right? Like, who are we even going to get? That's realistic. And then John Calipari, the arguably a Mount, you know, at least a top five coach right now, as most lists, because of his way to navigate blue blood programs, and has won everywhere he went. They fell backwards into this. So I think he's going to do great. Especially without the insane expectations. They go nuts to make the tournament, dude. Like, John Calipari is going to make the tournament, I would imagine.
And into his own conference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's big.
Like, just a wild move. And it's interesting, too, because I think the very interesting part, we kind of hit on it earlier, is that Kentucky, like, if you think they didn't have the money to keep him around, you're crazy. If they wanted, if Kentucky basketball wanted to pony up to keep him, there is no question that they could have done it. Right. And so this was a deliberate choice. I think it's fascinating to think about who is going to replace him, especially because, so we'll wrap up the Cal part and then we'll talk about the other two, but especially because two coaches have already come out and said that they won't be replacing him. And those two coaches are, well, one's not even a coach. One's calling he's running part of the studio session tonight, and that's Jay Wright, former Villanova legend, one of the best coaches of all time. And then Nate Oates, Alabama's head coach, recently Final Four team. Talk about a guy who brought a program back from nothing. Probably the top two names on everybody's list. They both publicly said, again, before the job's even technically available, that they will not be taking it. And I think it's interesting from both of their perspectives. Like, there's some life lessons to be learned in their decisions. Like, Jay Wright is just got the truly has like the code of life cracked. Like, he won two national championships.
Dipped.
He is now, including the one with the best finish in national championship game history in the made three walk-off for Villanova. And, you know, he's good. He's in his, what, his late 50s, I think? Like, mid to late 50s, even? I don't even know if he's that old. And he's calling games, probably making as much money doing that or close to it as he was coaching. And he's... no pressure. He's all set. He's a legend, and he's cool with being that legend. It's cool to see a head coach that's been that good, you know, kind of be a somewhat well-adjusted human being, it appears. So, interesting there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nate Oates element to me is, honestly, it's weird. I mean, we talk about it all the time, where it's like, just be happy. Like, self-aware. It's the one of the most self-aware moves. Like, Nate Oates might have the best college basketball job out there, because you talk about no pressure. There is no there's nowhere in the country that's an actual program, right? That's like a real actual adult program, right, that has less pressure, because it's Alabama basketball. They could win five national titles in a row, and I'm not sure that people would, you know, in Alabama would care more about them than they would about the football team.
Right.
So he's still winning. He's recruiting. He's killing it, wearing dope jackets, and knows that if he and Kalen DeBoer walked down the street in Tuscaloosa, DeBoer's getting stopped 100 times before Nate Oates, anybody even looks at Nate Oates. People are asking Nate Oates to take a picture of him of them and Kalen DeBoer.
Make yourself useful.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued by, you know, how that plays out. I'm sure he's going to get a raise from, you know, Bama, but those are two big names off the board. Do you think they have their eye on somebody else? I know a couple guys I'd go after, but I'd like to hear your take.
I think if you fire Cal, that means that national championships must be a prerequisite. It's mandatory for the resume. And I know we're talking about Nate Oates because he is, you know, maybe the exception to that rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his forward thinking NBA like style of basketball. I think with that, it's a small pool of guys if natties are it. And Scott Drew at Baylor seems ripe for the for the taking here. At Baylor, one in that. They'll throw the book or they'll throw the bag at him, you know. Baylor won't be able to match it. And I mean, like, the move from, as we've talked about, Big 12 to the Big 10 or SEC is, even if it's not football, basketball, just the money is going to be bigger and better. So long term, you know, it's way more headaches. The expectation, they will fire you if you don't win a national championship. They did it to Tubby Smith. They let John Calipari go. Like, this is the expectation. So, I think he would be up on that list. And then as far as plucking from other blue bloods, it's probably not realistic, right? You know, Shire, a lifer. Hubert Davis is a lifer at North Carolina. Bill Self is a lifer. You mentioned... Jay Wright, you mentioned him. I don't think Villanova's coach is I don't know if Villanova is blue blood anymore after
he left.
And so there you go, right? Like, where else do you pull from except for, I think, a name? You don't want Matt Painter, even if he has the same problem Cal did. Couldn't beat double-digit seed teams. That leaves only a handful of other guys. And who are you thinking? I think I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that's just like glaringly obvious to me. And it's glaringly obvious, but I don't. If it's realistic, then it would kind of bum me out. And that's Dan Hurley at UConn. I mean, by the time we're done recording this, he might be a back-to-back national champion at UConn. I think it's interesting that, like, I would also imagine he'll come out and shut it down pretty quickly. He's a Northeasterner, like through and through. He's got this program rolling. And like, it's a blue blood. We went under some tough circumstances, but like why would you ruffle that? You know what I mean? Well, he brought him back. They were that for so long.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
they were under Calhoun, they were as good as it got.
For sure. And then there was a dip, right? And they still won one during the dip, which is mind-blowing. You're right. They are absolutely. And that's why they're so cranky about Michigan State being in the Champions Classic. And they are. Yeah.
I get it, but it sucks to suck.
It does suck to suck. It sucks to be a small-time school, man. And that's the problem with UConn here is no matter what, Kentucky will always be able to give more money. Anyone in the Big Ten in the SEC will have that.
I think they're going to have to, like, you talk about the Brinks truck. Like, if I'm Kentucky and you purport to be the blue blood that you are, like, where you think, like, okay, my name should be, like Dan Hurley should take my call. You need to back up the capital B, all caps, Brinks truck. Yeah. Like, I would take, at least save $33 million by Cal walking. Take that, add 100 to it, and then make him get on the phone and tell you, I'm not taking your $133 million. Require him to say those words to you.
Put it in writing.
Absolutely. No question. Yeah. Like, to me, you absolutely have to apply that. You have to. You have to take the swing. Even if he tells you no, which you almost definitely will, you got to take the swing. Uh-huh. Here's a name that we haven't mentioned that I think might be a bit of a sleeper right now. Uh-huh. That's Kelvin Sampson.
Yeah, he's a little old on the older side. That's a great name.
He's old, no question, but he was also the coach of the year this year. He again, talk about a guy that brought a program from what? What was Houston doing before he got there? Thinking about Phi Slamajama? I mean, I get that he's 68, but you can't tell me that he wouldn't come in. I mean, they're not building for the future at Kentucky. They're trying to win a national championship in 2024.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that he's off the table. I think ultimately, if you gave it to him, you know, if you let them choose, they would obviously want someone who's going to be there for 20 years the way Cal was. But, like, you'd have a hard time telling me that hiring Kelvin Sampson for the next five wouldn't be a great move. So, I don't know. That one to me, I don't think I've heard that mentioned anywhere. And that one to me just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it would. You're right. He is 68. Fun fact, he was his first college or his coaching job was at Michigan State. He was a GA in the 79-80 season, right after the title. So I think going back to Dan Hurley, he is – to me, the perfect guy, because he's as insane as Kentucky fans. He reaches their level of assholery and like he'd flourish. The only other name, and this is in my eyes the nuclear option, is to bring Rick Pitino back.
Oh baby. I think I said this to you before we started. I would help fund whatever it took to make that happen. Like,
it's so good.
Put the number on a piece of paper and hand it to me. It's oh my God. Just the sheer entertainment value would be truly as good as it gets. Like, oh man. I don't even know if I can think about it.
You know he's asking. You know he's calling, and he's like, "I want that."
Oh my God! Of course he is. They're on the phone 10 different times already. I think another interesting one. I don't know. Like, there's some other good coaches out there that I think get like a legit shot. Mark Pope at BYU, which has been a Big 12 team, hung in there this year, 10-8 in the conference. He was the captain on the Wildcats '96 championship team. He could be an interesting one. Maybe a bit of a sleeper, but a big name that probably could be available and shocked people with a move one time is Shaka Smart. That's a total curveball. I don't think it would happen, but if we're just playing the why not game.
Well, I got a text from a Marquette friend today, this morning actually, unprompted, that said, I'm going to pull it up. He says, Shaka wouldn't do it, right? Please just say no, and I am right. Thank you. And I, just to make him nervous, you know, I played him along. But I will I said, not to be mean, but I don't think he has had the postseason success that would reach the interest level of Kentucky.
Yeah, I would agree.
Marquette's choked, man.
A couple times.
You are what you've done most recently, and you can't cling to a run with a mid-major over a decade ago. So I don't know. I don't think that's realistic, but they're going to be whale hunting, and I'm excited for this to play out. I'm excited for potentially tonight, Dan Hurley raising the banner or raising the trophy and then tweeting out peace.
Oh my God. Just the shoes over the phone line.
Just takes a private flight to Lexington afterward. God,
that would be so awesome. I mean, it's gonna be fascinating. That's a huge move. So I think realistically, like, I think you're right about Scott Drew. Scott Drew to me feels like the most proven, consistent, attainable elite coach that they could and would go after. That kind of falls in that, like, hey, he could be here for 15 years. And Baylor wasn't an easy place. Again, we're talking about another guy who took a program from, like, maybe they were as low as it got. Like, it doesn't get worse than where Baylor was when Scott Drew took over. And, you know, it's not like they've fallen off since he won his national championship. I mean, they've been they were a three seed this year. I mean, they were, you know, one of the best teams. I think they, came in third in the Big 12. I mean, he's got to be on your short list. So, yeah, I mean, they have some good options. I just can't imagine them, like you said, not whale hunting and, you know, really, really going for it. So, and then the domino effect from there is kind of fascinating as well, right? Like, you know, who fills those shoes? And maybe it's Baylor, you know. If it was UConn, like, where do those guys all go? So fascinating stuff. Silly season, baby. It's the best.
Excited to send any of those job openings to another Michigan State assistant if he's interested. Anyway. Moving forward there to our basketball team, we bid farewell to one Maddie Sissoko, who will be playing, potentially, I think, playing basketball somewhere else as a graduate level senior. I don't know what you call it. Graduate student. I'm sorry. You
get his transfer.
Master's for free. Yeah, get his master's for free. That's great. That's awesome. Good luck to him. That leaves two centers currently on the roster, Carson Cooper and Jackson Kohler. I haven't heard a lot of chatter about center portaling, although there was some rumblings of Terrace Reed from Michigan, who was recruited heavily by Michigan State, and Tom Izzo was interested, wanted. He took a step this year despite his team being awful. I think we've discussed that you have to get a center or you can't expect to be competitive at the high level, as we watch Purdue and UConn's two centers dominate. If you can't, you know, you don't have to have centers to win national championships necessarily, but you need to have someone who can stop someone from going off. And Zach Edey is a once in a generation player in the sense of his size. So beyond him, like, you need to have a body for Donovan Clingan. And right now I'm not sure if Carson Cooper is that. So you got to go maybe find somebody. And maybe Terrace Reed is the guy. We do know is that Michigan State is vocally heavily involved in three wing guards. Frankie Fiddler from Nebraska, Omaha. He will be having a final visit with Michigan State, I believe this weekend or maybe next weekend, fourth of four schools, and only four schools being considered. Bad news for Michigan State fans there. He was high school teammates with Chucky Hepburn, who is entering his seventh year at Wisconsin, and undoubtedly they have to be the leader in the clubhouse as they won a state championship together. But still visiting East Lansing, at the very least, will enjoy his time at Rick's and the Fieldhouse. So enjoy. Any comments on that?
Guy scored 20 points a game, even if it is at Omaha. I think there's something to be. Well, let's finish up, and then I think there's a theme here.
Keyshawn Hall, George Mason. Interesting story about Keyshawn. He had transferred to George Mason. I'll give you the intangibles, Austin. I'll give you the stats. He got hurt, twisted his ankle at the end of the year, towards the end of the year, and didn't really play in their final game, although he was, I believe, their leading rebounder and second leading scorer. It's a little odd that he wouldn't play. And rumors had it that he earlier in the year was already looking to transfer and see how much he was worth. And I think that is going to happen more often, unfortunately. And I'm not saying he quit on his team, but he was just, looking out for number one, and the coach didn't like that. Whether that's right or wrong, it's not for me to decide. It's just the situation. So he is available and is open about it. And the third is Javon Hadley, Colorado wing. We are in his top two. I would like to think Michigan State has a very good shot because he played high school basketball with Trey Holloman and played with Tyson Walker for 1 year at Northeastern. So you feel like that is a position, or this is a guy they have a real shot with. So those are the three hot ones right now. The portal is heating up. It is not finished. But these are three guys that have been targeted because they are mercenary bucket getters. And that is something Michigan State will desperately need.
And you hit the nail on the head, because that is what Michigan State is clearly in the market for. The similarities between these three: Fiddler, 6'7", 205, 20 points a game. Keyshawn Hall, 6'7", 230, 17 points a game. Hadley, 6'6", 205, 12 and 6. If I'm calling a spade a spade, if they can't reel in Javon Hadley, they're in trouble. They're going up against, I think you said, Iowa State for a guy that potentially, obviously Tyson Walker not going to be on Michigan State's team anymore, but that's about as big a vouch as you can get. And you get to go then play with 20-year-old high school teammates, potentially even start alongside him at a position that this team just desperately needs, which is a wing scorer. If that's not enough for you, There's some big underlying issues there for Michigan State. Hadley, if you look at his stats, maybe aren't eye-popping. Again, averaged a little under 12 a game, 6 rebounds, only 2.5 assists. He did shoot over 41% from three, and was on a team that had five guys that averaged basically 11 points or more, including KJ Simpson and potential top five or so pick in Cody Williams. So ball had to get moved around quite a bit. He was efficient with it, shot 84% from the free throw line and 54% from the field. So a guy that you can feel comfortable with as kind of that secondary or tertiary playmaker, can shoot a little bit, give you some spacing, and really like that wing spot at MSU is very up in the air right now. As of now, you'd pencil either Jaden Akins if he returns, or Cohen Carr into that three spot. And that's either a guy who's undersized for the position in Akins and probably playing out of position, or, an athletic freak in Carr, but a guy that is extremely raw, especially from a technical perspective. So be it Hadley, be it Fiddler or Hall, all three of them, I think, fill a very obvious gap for Michigan State. Personally, I think Keyshawn Hall would be the best fit in terms of long term. He's only a sophomore this year, at 6'7", 230. He's got some serious bulk to him. Averaged, like I said, 17 and 8. Clearly more to unlock there from his game. And so, you know, having watched a very limited amount of his, there's a lot to like. Shot 36 or so percent from three. He has already transferred once and is clearly looking to transfer again. You know, there's Hadley has also transferred once before as well.
Yeah, one note about Keyshawn, I think that should be, he at one point, I think in high school, weighed 295 pounds.
Wow.
It was an issue for him, and he got, you know, himself in the position to play Division I basketball. But it is a concern for anyone. That's just one more thing to consider. So, yeah, he's a very large guard. But yeah, those are the hot names right now. We'll see where we
end up. But the question. The open question has got to be, what about the bigs, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned it. Does Michigan State realistically have a guy that you think can guard a Donovan Clingett? We know we're talking about the starting center in a national championship game, but
is that not where you want to be?
You're Michigan State. Like, again, even if the last couple of years haven't been what you wanted them to be, your expectations shouldn't change. And so you need a realistic answer for that. Now, is Carson Cooper probably going to be a step better next year? Sure. I think it's fair to believe that with Matty Sissoko not, you know, competing with him, he's probably the clear-cut starter at the five. Or Xavier Booker gets pushed down there. And either way, you know, Donovan Clingett is eating them both for lunch, I think, at this point in time. Booker's just way too small to realistically guard him on the post. And Cooper, again, you know, might be passable either way, not enough depth there. Jackson Kohler, you know, I think we saw some fun flashes from him at the end of the year, but since the day he got on campus, we've always known he's going to be limited as a defender. It doesn't have like really requisite height to hang with top level centers throughout college basketball. So what do you do at that position? We haven't heard, like you said, Terrace Reed. We heard some discussion on, a name that entered the portal today that I think there's very little opportunity for Michigan State to go after would be Umar Ballo from Arizona. I got to think he's probably looking to cash in somewhere and can't really blame him for it.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it all kind of centers around this, like how does Michigan State want to play the portal era? Because they have to play it. But if they're not going to support it to go get, you know, I don't believe that Michigan State will ever throw bags the way you're going to see other teams throw bags around. So, like, again, Ballo on the surface is a guy that makes a painful amount of sense for Michigan State. And again, on the surface should be a guy Michigan State should be a program he considers realistically. Look at the back to the basket, big, great bigs they've had. Like, there's a ton of them. And they have such an obvious, glaring need, and they're in a premier, you know, conference. Like, there's no reason why he shouldn't be on that hot list, but, you know, we're sitting here knowing that Izzo doesn't really like to play the game all that much, and they probably don't support it with NIL the way that some of these other programs do, and so in all likelihood he's headed elsewhere. But you know, that's kind of the pickle that they find themselves in. But I guess I say all that to say that I really don't think that you can feel confident in this front court top to bottom without another addition, even if that's a depth guy behind Cooper or Booker, just to like round out the front court. Terrace Reed to me is a phenomenal answer for that, because he's probably starting, first of all, but he just gives you a toughness and a rebounding edge that would support the rest of this cast very, very well. So without that, I'm not sure you can really like walk away from this offseason feeling great about the front court.
Yeah, I will note, you know, there aren't a ton of like great centers in
there.
And that's something that should be noted, that they're just, it's kind of like offensive linemen. Like, you just, you got to evaluate and get that right in high school a lot of the time. And there are just so few. So it's not like there are a ton of people that MSU could just solve this problem with and just frankly aren't. They could get guys, but honestly, they are will be at the level that MSU currently has. Majority of them will be. Carson Cooper is a, you know, just fine second string center at a good program. He's being asked to be a starter. I think if you get three second string level centers, you're working with something at that point. I don't think they had that this year. I think they had 1.5 second string centers, and we had three guys. You know what I mean? So I think they need, like you said, to fill up the gap. There are a couple people that others have noted. Cliff Omaruye from Rutgers, phenomenal defensive player. We know he can compete at the Big Ten level. Pharrell Payne at Minnesota, undersized, but again, this is what you're kind of looking at. Golden from Florida Atlantic, I'd like to say he's probably off the board considering his coach is Dusty. At the very least, Dusty May is going to say, like, look, you aren't coming here, you ain't going there. Don't do that. And so, you know what I mean? Like, there just aren't a ton of immediate plug-and-play opportunities. So
I think the comparison to offensive linemen is a really good one, because if you look at the best college football teams unanimously across the board, they are the ones that have offensive linemen that you put into the NFL. And I'm not sure that necessarily the center to the NBA part of this comparison works all that well, because centers in the NBA don't exist all that much anymore. But the best programs consistently year in, year out in college basketball have a great big man, a great five that can at a minimum defend the paint, that can block shots, that can rebound, deter drivers to the rim, and force college basketball players to take shots from areas that they're not as good at making shots from. I mean, it's not a coincidence that we're looking at Zach Edey and Donovan Klingon going head to head in this game. It's not, you know, a coincidence that, I think Balo is a great example. Again, Arizona may have flamed out early in this tournament, but it's another guy who was dominant for his team that won a ton of games over the last handful of years. Sure. So yeah, it's not surprising. And it's a position that you like really have to prioritize recruiting, and you like have to get it right, because like you said, it's so difficult. Like, those guys don't leave. Those programs don't let them go places. Yeah. So you have to be able to recruit it well.
And well, we'll see if any more names enter the portal that look a bit more appealing, but like to see Michigan State start to make some moves as people are beginning to commit.
Yeah,
people were committing to teams that were still in the tournament. So I'd like to see Michigan State be a touch more active, considering the circumstances of we're at a DEFCON. Say, as a program, where do you feel like we're at? You know, one being the worst situation possible, and five being it's a problem that we need to address pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we're one or two subtractions away from it being darn near a DEFCON one. Just being realistic, like, I think I personally won't be surprised to see a player or two from Michigan State's roster at a minimum test the waters in the portal. Right. You know,
gotta see how much you're worth.
100%. And again, same thing we said last year when AJ Hogard and Jaden Akins did it, is I can't blame them for doing it. It's what they should do. Yeah. Speaking of Akins, I'd be a little surprised if he doesn't at least put his name into the you know, or declare for the NBA or however you want to look at it. Like, it would surprise me if he doesn't do that. And again, if I'm one of his advisors, I tell him to do it. He shouldn't do it. Why not? Sure. I don't think he's leaving Michigan State to go somewhere else, because if he does, I'll put it this way. If he does, he's getting bad advice from somebody, because you're just, I don't know where else. I don't think the program of Michigan State's like caliber that's going to give Jaden Akins the chance to start and probably be the primary ball handler and score. Maybe not handler, but primary scoring option. Like,
you know,
primary scoring option at Michigan State's about as good as it's going to get.
Well, exactly. And you know, if you
it's pretty damn good.
Yeah. And it, or you can do the Pierre Brooks thing and go be the, you know, best or second best player for a NIT team. And
right.
And you can if you want to do that. But I just don't think it's I don't think it's the right move. But hey, you know, he's going to have to take a big step this year. Because if you're talking about a guy who we haven't seen him do anything off the dribble for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you want him to be a ball handler. I don't. It was an adventure when he'd put the ball on the ground beyond one dribble and can't use his right hand to save his life. So, yep. Like you said, the other blue bloods are like, you can be like, we're good. Like, but I'm not putting him down in the sense that you need a big, he's a Big Ten caliber above average guard like that. Those don't, there are not a lot of those, you know, you need those to be a good team, but asking him to be the best player, that's where we're, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's going to take a big jump.
Yeah. I mean, so here, if you just, again, just look at the team, right? Like right now we're sitting here, assuming AJ Hogarth does not exercise his ability to come back, assuming, you know, Xavier Booker and Akins, probably the two names that get thrown out there for transfers the most, which even the Booker's come said he's not going to do it. Like assuming everybody else stays in place, right? You've got 11 guys. Your backcourt rotation is some combination of Jeremy Fears, Trey Holloman, Jaden Akins, and a freshman. Where do we think that's going to stack up in the Big Ten?
I think that's okay. I think that's fine. I don't think it's elite, but I think it's just fine. I think Fears and Akins and Holloman are just fine. And who knows what you get from one of the freshmen, maybe. That's fine.
Right. Jeremy Fears, for all intents and purposes, is a freshman again.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you're talking about a decent amount of experience from, obviously, from Akins. Holloman has plenty of experience at this point. So those are two guys I think you feel pretty confident in being, like you said, capable to above average guards. The other three, again, Fears, I think we see a huge amount of potential in. But, like, I think Fears, is, you have reason to be as optimistic with him as anybody on this roster, in my opinion. So I think that, but there's obviously growing pains, especially at the point guard position. And then between Kurt Tang and Jace Richardson, you know, two guys that are really well-regarded recruits, top 50 type kids, one of them's going to have to play at least somewhat in a rotation like that, unless there's another guard that comes along. And then you look down at, you know, kind of the wing-ish position, and like, I guess the two and the three are really the wings. So you can kind of fold the three into this backcourt or frontcourt conversation. But realistically, you're talking about Cohen Carr and Garrett Norman. Norman, a guy who redshirted this past year, didn't play, known to be a shooter, better athlete than he looks. But again, zero experience. And then Cohen Carr, I think, again, for as fun as he is to watch, we saw.
He's a four.
He's a college four, and B, he is as raw a player as we have had maybe ever at Michigan State in terms of just like skill set on both ends of the floor. He is also maybe the best athlete, or certainly one of the best athletes. Yep. But the trade-off is the skill is. Needs to take significant steps forward if he's going to be a regular contributor, or he's just like on offense, he's going to get completely left behind. They won't guard him. And on defense, you know, I say all that knowing that with a full off season, knowing he's going to get minutes, I'm sure he takes a step forward, but I think you can also see why Michigan State is recruiting a big scoring wing to fill in there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why you've seen the I think it's going to happen. Like Michigan State is going to add a player in the portal from this wing position. It's a must. Cohen Carr is playing out of position. He should be playing the power forward spot.
Yes.
We should be running things for him, not asking him to be with the ball on the perimeter. It needs to be back cut oriented. You need to be running, you know, double picks for him to the basket. Use the athleticism, figure it out. Having him run the weave at the top and dribbling the ball and asking him to do anything is just it was ludicrous. So pushing him down to the four would be fantastic. Hoping Normand is capable of giving minutes, and there's just going to have to be a plug in at the three spot, because you'd like Booker to be starting and Carr spelling him. That's nice, right? And mm-hmm. you could start to live with the Carson Cooper, Jackson Kohler, and hopefully a third center if you have Booker and Carr as and freshman McCullough, if you could get anything out of him. I don't know. Probably not. That's okay. You're starting to look at the team and you're like, okay, this team looks like an NCAA tournament caliber team. I don't know how good, but they're certainly – you can do something with them. How good can they become to do anything in the NCAA tournament is TBD, but the talent level, we are two transfers away from, I would say.
Yeah, and it appears as though they're aware of that in the room. And I think I said this last time, but beyond all of that, like, A, there's just like a requisite talent level you have to have to maintain the streak that they're on, right? Uh-huh. Which I don't think that they're that far from. And I don't think these additions have to be all Americans. I think they have to be functional, above average Big Ten players, ideally more than that, right? Mm-hmm. But that's what you need to fill out a legit rotation. Well, what's as important as anything, though, is the identity. How is this team going to play? Like you said, having Cohen Carr running the weave at the top of the key is not the best way to utilize his gifts. Like, I think Jaden Akins at the three has been miscast his entire career. We're not throwing the ball into Cooper and Kohler, maybe Kohler a little bit to try and let them go to work. But like, what is your identity? Because Michigan State's identity has always been rebounding, toughness, and fast breaks. Now, they started to do the fast break thing pretty darn well this year. They didn't turn the ball over a ton, but they just fell apart whenever the rubber hit the road. And a lot of it was because they couldn't rebound. And when you can't rebound, you can't get out on the fast break, because you give the defense a chance to set every single time down the court. And so in offensive rebounding, they know offensive rebounding. That's a place where they've always been great as well. So if you can't recover that identity, it almost – the talent level is secondary to everything else. So they not only like need to raise that talent floor, but what comes with that is like, they just got to get back to being them. They had that. And again, you talk about bringing in a new coach. It's great to have a new coach with new faces and new ways to evaluate and all that. But then also, like, you have one of the guys who's been in his programs as long as anybody, if not longer than anybody else in the country at this point in time. Like, get back to what made him so good for so long. Like, I really don't want to overstate it, but this feels like a truly, I don't want to call it a last gasp. I don't want to call it like this apocalyptic type of year. But if you can't get it back on track this year, it's going to be tough to do moving forward. Because if it sort of falls apart, you're talking about transfers, you'll have 5 years in a row then of being a mediocre program. Like, again, a program that makes the Big Ten, it makes the tournament, which is great, but like,
maybe
that's what I mean. But like, that's the ceiling. We'll never be able to take away, nor should we ever try to, everything that Tom Izzo and Michigan State have accomplished, right? Absolutely not. But when you're recruiting 18-year-old kids and you've been mid since they were 13, they're going to remember that. And that's what they know. And so, you know, people start to forget names like Cassius Winston very quickly when that's the case. So that's why I think that this year they got to find a way. They got to find a way to maintain that, you know, kind of getting back to who they are, so they can keep that place that they've earned.
You're right. I mean, we talk out of both sides of our mouth every time, and
definitely
we have to. USC just got a steal in Eric Musselman as their head coach. He didn't make the tournament this year. Like, Tom Izzo, for all of his faults, makes it work with below average, with not NBA talent. And that is also the problem, because when he does get it, sometimes it's not used, maybe to, who knows if it is being used to the best of its ability. I don't know. I'm watching some guys and playing the national championship right now. We're going to play in the NBA, and they seem to be doing just fine. So, I mean, it's hard. It's hard, right? So I will say, you know, Xavier Booker, for what we saw, is an NBA athlete. How big of a step does he take? TBD,
yeah.
Right? Jeremy Fears, we only got a glimpse of the hardest and most raw part of anyone's college career. The first, what, 10 games, 13 games? Yeah, we don't know what we got. We know it was good. We know it was just fine. We know you don't normally have that as a true freshman point guard. You had Trey Holloman have flashes of goodness, not greatness. Certainly not afraid of anybody, which is nice to see. Akins, I said, above average guard, power six guard. And then you hope someone, one of the freshmen, is takes a step. And then you need to land two, as we said, spots. And if you don't, then there's no reason to have any real expectation for this season beyond continuing the tournament streak, which is feels really reductive as a fan to feel like that is the goal.
Yeah, which is it feels like our goals should be higher than that. Now, one piece of, you know, good, like, positive silver lining here is that, like, teams find great transfers every single year.
Yep.
I mean, I think UConn's starting a couple. I believe, like, I
Cam,
think it was
Cam Spencer was at Rutgers, and before that he was at put me on the spot, Loyola Maryland. So I mean, he's the most solid player on the team. They are on nearly every single Elite Eight team had at least one transfer starting, I believe. The exception might have been Duke. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I am just in. That's the.
You but can here's the do
other
it.
Thing. Well, here's the other thing. MSU is one thing no one has really said out loud is that the guys that Izzo recruited from high school, if they didn't have a transfer player come in over the last 4 years, they don't make the tournament. They don't make the tournament without Joey Hauser or Tyson Walker. They weren't just contributors. They were the best player for what? Three years total.
I mean, they were the two best players on the team before last.
Right. So,
I mean, and there is part of it where it's like, you know, Izzo has played the card. He's done it. Mm-hmm. He just needs to. Well, I think that does speak to something too, though, where it's like, why those same role players are the guys he's recruited just like haven't gotten better. And I'm hoping I think maybe more than anything else, that is absolutely the thing that raises the ceiling on next year's team more than anything else, is like, what steps do these guys take? Because if they come back as the same group of players, are this year's team with some other transfer stepping in for Tyson Walker. Those are big shoes to fill. And then, a transfer stepping in for Mati Sissoko, which are physically bigger shoes to fill, but probably production-wise a little bit easier to replace.
Sure.
But replacing a guy like Tyson Walker is no easy task. I don't know. It is a wide open offseason. They can get it really right or they can get it really wrong. And it feels like, you know, we're going to find out which one it's going to be here probably sooner rather than later, just given the speed that the portal works at.
Fun times ahead. I mean, at least it's exciting.
Interesting times, certainly.
Maybe exciting is the wrong word because it is scary hours. It said my glass half full is this team is two roster members away from being legit. And is that national title legit? Honestly, we won't know until these rosters start to shake out across the country. You kind of let the dust settle here and see, all right, who's got who, how did it all work out? I will tell you that if they get a wing who can score and they don't fill the center position, I bet this is a top 30 team. I don't know if they, I think, and then you'll see how many steps people took. And you hope they were big and you hope Kerr Tang or Jace Richardson are really good, you know? So long way to go, but it's the portal and the coaching, man, it's been eventful at the very least.
Indeed. It's going to be interesting. Could be really fun. We just don't know yet.
Yeah.
All right, John, you got anything else?
I will say, let's just quickly about the tournament. It was a really good tournament. I think the two best teams all year made it to the finals in both men's and women's. And that.
We could talk women's basketball really quickly. Sorry I interrupted you.
No. Yeah, exactly. The final, the women's Final Four was incredibly entertaining. The women's tournament was incredibly entertaining, but really once the, you know, the cream of the crop of women's basketball got into the, you know, the Sweet 16, man, was that a lot of fun.
Yeah, those girls are awesome. Like, it was so much fun to watch. I mean, you certainly watched more of it than I did. I pretty much tuned in for the Final Four, but I thought it was very cool to see the viewership numbers and that, you know, a ton of respect is being given to just some great, like, just greatness. Like, the fact that South Carolina went undefeated on their second championship in, you know, 3 years over, like, the individual superstar and Caitlin Clark. I thought I saw something on Twitter today that was, like, the New York Liberty – or, no, the Phoenix Mercury where Diana Taurasi plays.
Yeah.
Like, they were saying that they were advertising, like, the GOAT versus the rookie. And it just had like a silhouette of a player with the number 22 on their back.
Yeah.
And like Caitlin Clark hasn't even been drafted yet, but they already are advertising their game against the Indiana Fever. I think it is that.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's cool. It's always fun to see like that take a step up. And I think what's cool about women's basketball, and again, like I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but it feels like there are 4 or 5 programs now that are legit kind of national championship contenders every year. I mean, like we talked about UConn the other day. UConn, LSU is always there. Obviously, South Carolina's one. Iowa will be interesting to see how you replace the 11, Stanford. But yeah, it's cool. I really genuinely, like, again, it probably like doesn't say great things about me, but one of my first times watching, like, legit really paying attention, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, I think it was a great introduction for a lot of people, or reintroduction for some. It was fantastic games, a lot of subplots, household names in from across the tournament. We have said it before, there are probably 5 women college basketball players who are more famous than the most famous men's player.
Oh yeah.
Zach Edey is probably the most well-known household name, I would say, and it's because of his size, truly, and the skill that goes with it, I'm suppose. But you think about the women's game, there are so many stars now, and really, I think one light at the end of the tunnel for men's college basketball to get back to that type of excitement is that the G League Ignite team is going to cease to exist. Because NIL exists and they don't need to fulfill that role they feel. And now that only leaves overtime elite or overseas places for players to go. Now that players can get paid the like real money, like real big time money, you're going to start to see NBA guys, more NBA guys in the college basketball space. And that is when it's going to get exciting again, really exciting again. And think, like you said before, I think weeks past, thank goodness Michigan State has gone through this lull when there's been no real talent across the board. We're going to have to pick it up pretty quick, though, because it's coming back.
Oh, yeah. And it starts next year with Cooper Flagg.
Exactly.
If you don't know who he is, you are going to find out and you are going to hate him.
Yeah.
He's going to be so good at Duke. So,
If you didn't know him, you already knew where he was going. Duke.
Yeah, exactly. with the name Cooper Flagg, you knew where that was all headed. But yeah, there's some I think that's a incredibly good thing for men's basketball and for all the sports, but like it's so good for men's that you know, that folded and that we're you know, gonna, because if you look at the guys who went through there, man, you're talking about, I think the G League Knight had like Scoot Henderson was there. I mean, you've got some like top 5-10 picks for the last 4 or 5 years, like guys that would have been so much fun to watch for a year in college basketball. And again, like you wonder why this year, especially like we're 4 years or so into the Ignite being around, and you wonder why this year of all of them is the one that really lacks the star power. It's because those freshmen from the last 4 or 5 classes all went to those places.
Exactly.
They didn't even have the chance to like become 2 year guys that stuck around a little longer because they just all went there and then went pro. And, you know, it's, that's why I loved the, you know, I loved when that wasn't an option. I don't begrudge any of those kids for going anywhere and doing whatever they got to do. Like we've always said, go get paid. But if you get paid in college now, like, you know, everybody thought like, oh, everyone will be tuning into the G League and the overtime league. Nobody watches those games and nobody cares. So the shine's worn off, the false, you know, the pretenses have been proven wrong. And now they know, you look at the numbers for college basketball, man, everybody's watching it. Everybody's always watching it. So go get you, you know, I think it'll be more fun to have the best players play on the biggest stage.
Exactly. Well, here's hoping we get some of those biggest players in the near future. I think Xavier Booker can be one of them. I think Jeremy Fierce can be one of them. Who knows if Cohen Carr can develop a jump shot? He could. Got some dudes. Kurt Tang could be nice, by the way. We're not excited enough about him, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's reasons to believe. But our favorite basketball son will go into hibernation, I guess. Well, maybe not, because like we said, the portal and the coaching will keep us on our toes for a little bit here. And then it's off season for football, dude. And that's going to be heating up.
It's coming.
The draft is coming. We got to talk draft next time.
Oh yeah, we will get there. And portal opens back up for college football here in I think about a week. Okay. So I'm sure madness will ensue. Uh-huh. There's plenty to talk about. Perfect. All right, guys, as always, thanks for sticking with us all season. We appreciate you. For John, this has been Austin, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah.